How much time, money, are you really wasting on mismanaging multiple projects? Are your projects constantly fighting for your attention, leaving you overwhelmed and, let's be honest, family, even feeling burnt out? What if I told you that the key to faster solutions and better outcomes is hidden in your ability to, watch this, family, manage your time, communication, as well as your project expectation? But the true question is, how do you truly unlock that potential? Well, in today's episode, I'm going to discuss some battle-tested strategies as well as tactics that have saved countless of projects from disaster. Oh, by the way, P.S. This is real-life project management, not theories. You mind if I share a story with you? My manager assigned me another project manager's project, and the project was already in the middle stages when I took over the project. Now, I know the most appropriate way to respond to a matter like this is to tell your manager, thank you, and I will get you up to speed as soon as possible. But to quote the great Whitney Houston, hell to the no. I mean, literally, family, I mean, okay, that was what I was thinking at the time, if we're just being honest. So I had to ask, you know, one vital question is what happened to the other project manager leading the project? My manager said that he couldn't lead the project because his other two projects were taking up more of his time than he thought. So, you know, family, at this point, you know where my mind is. If you don't, here, I'll just tell you. I was hot at, okay, I won't go there. This is a G-rated show. Anyways, I had to realize that I had to figure this out. And so I did. This is why in today's episode, I'm going to discuss actual strategies and tactics that I used. Again, family, no theories. These are actual strategies and tactics that I believe if you ever have to manage multiple projects, and when I say multiple, I mean two or more projects. I hope today's episode resonates well with you because, family, I've already done the homework. Here's my answers. Point number one, learn to say no to preserve focus and resources. You know, in project management, you frequently encounter requests for like additional tasks, like tasks for meetings, tasks to set up, you know, even new projects within the new project. And saying yes to everything can lead you to miss deadlines, quality issues, as well as the favorite thing here is being burnt out. So being able to say no, but watch this, family, strategically, it's critical for protecting one's focus, time, and the resources that he's leading to successfully manage your primary projects. And as I said, that is the strategy. Here's some of the tactics, or what I'm going to call actionable items. Evaluate requests. So before agreeing to a new request, assess its alignment with the current project priorities. Ask whether is it urgent or does it add value or can it be delayed? Now, I know what you're thinking. Well, it's just not that easy for me just to say no outright. I got you. You want to use a diplomatic response. Practice saying no with phrases like this. Given our current commitments, I can't take this right now. Or you don't like that one. How about this one? This may sound a little bit better. I would love to take on that particular project, but this may be suited for the later phase of the project. And you see what I'm doing, family, here is I'm maintaining the professionalism as well as the professional relationship while at the same time protecting my workload. Here's another proposed alternative. If you can't fulfill a request, suggest an alternative solution, like such as delegating that to another task member, or again, scheduling for a later time where resources are more available. Here's the last and final actionable tip. You want to set clear boundaries. Family, if you do not set clear boundaries, everyone will cross them. So being able to establish with keeping the main thing, or in a more professional approach, establish clear priorities with stakeholders and team members and communicate that additional requests will need to be evaluated based on availability and capacity prior to or during priorities. Point number two, develop communication channels that work for the project team to enhance collaboration. You know, one of the things that I've seen, and I'm just going to park here real quick, family. One of the things that I've seen is that project managers will try to manage a project through email, and they'll go back and forth through email, and they're like, why am I not getting a response from my project team on this particular item or that particular item? It's because you haven't identified what is their communication channel. Yes, some people love emails. You have others that like email and as well as Teams. And then you just have someone to say, hey, could you send me a message in Teams? And then can we document it somewhere? Because I get so many emails, it's not going to be worth my time. So let's go to the explanation. Effective communication is the backbone of any, and I do mean any successful project or within project management, especially family, when you are managing multiple projects. However, communication methods and preferences can widely vary across different team members. This is why I was recommending that you need to find the right communication channel. This way, it does a couple things here. It avoids misunderstanding, it reduces delays, and watch this, it keeps the team connected, whether they're in person or they are remote. Here's some actionable tips. I'm going to give you three. You choose one or use all three. Assess communication preferences and styles. Like I said, some people like instant messages. Some people like you picking up the phone. Some people like video calls. Other people like in-person meetings. Find out, or I should use a better word, adapt your communication plan to suit these preferences well while maintaining project requirements. Like I always say, family, you have to understand and learn your audience. If your audience is someone that likes video calls, you might need to do video calls. If your audience is one that is instant message driven, you need to do instant message driven messages. All right, next one, designate channels for specific purposes. So clearly define the purpose of each communication channel. Here's a good example. Like for instance, if you're using an instant messaging tool like a Slack or a Microsoft Teams for quick updates, use project management platforms for task tracking and emails for formal communication. By doing this, it establishes guidelines on when and how to use each channel. And then most of all, set up regular touch points. These do not need to be 30 minutes, 45 minutes, hour. You need to understand when you're going into that meeting, you want to be prepared. You want to know what you're talking about. So when you get there, you should say, hey, this should be only 15 minutes. Here are the things I need to find out. Where are we at with this task? Are you running into any impediments? Is there anything that you need for me to help move you along on the task that you've been assigned? That's it. Once we get that feedback, boom, I'm going on to the next meeting. All right, let's move on to point number three. Message. You know, again, if you're new to the episode, anytime I say message, this is something you want to pay attention to. If you're looking at something else besides listening and watching this episode, then I want to stop you right now, because this tip right here is the tip that really helped me become more focused and reduce the distraction. I actually use this in my personal life. You're like, okay, Ed, hurry up and get to it. I got you. So practice time blocking to maximize productivity and reduce distraction. Again, practice time blocking to maximize productivity and reduce distraction. Listen, time blocking is a productivity technique that involves setting aside a dedicated period of time for specific tasks or projects. This method allows you to focus deeply on one task at a time, as well as it minimizes distractions, helping you to make significant progress on each project. Let me park here again. I know I'm doing a lot of parking. We'll just say, hey, we're going to do this because I really want to over deliver on today's episode, because I really truly believe if you are leading one project, two projects, or more than that, these techniques or these strategies and tactics is going to help you along. So reason why I use this time blocking effort in my personal and professional life is because you will get notifications, and we're human. And what I mean by that is that there may something, you may have subscribed to this episode, which I appreciate, and it may come through, which I hope you put in watch later if you're working on something. But what I'm trying to say is that we can get caught up into something and an hour can go by, 2 hours can go by, or better yet, someone could come up to your cube, to your office, and they will just start a conversation with you. And the next time you look up, a couple hours have went by, and you're like, man, I haven't got anything done. So time blocking ensures that all projects receive the attention they need without being overshadowed by urgent and less important tasks. Here's your actionable tips. Create focused working sessions. What I would recommend is block off your calendar for 60 to 90 minutes on a single project. Now you can break this up how it varies, but this is something you want to do. And most of all, the secret sauce or the secret technique is using the do not disturb. Whether if you're in Teams, do not disturb. Whether it's your phone, do not disturb. Because again, if you do not do this, we're human. I fell for it every time. Like, I'm not going to put my phone in do not disturb because, you know, what if a call or what if this? I start making excuses for why I don't need to do it. And every single time I fall for that trap, I lose time. So putting your phone in do not disturb really helps eliminate distractions. Next one, use buffer blocks for unexpected tasks. Now, when you build in buffer time between your time blocks to handle like unforeseen issues, quick tasks, or breaks, this flexibility really helps you stay scheduled even if something unexpected arises. And the last and final tip, evaluate and adjust weekly. At the end of each week, review your time blocks to see what worked and what did not work. And then adjust for next week's schedule based on the time blocks where you are most productive and where improvements can be made. So if you realize, hey, I really don't probably need that whole 90, I probably need half of that, so I only need 45 minutes, then block your time off for that particular piece. But you constantly want to be measuring to see what is working well for you. Point number four, delegate effectively and efficiently, or I should say efficiently, to optimize team productivity. I'm sorry, fam. These, you know, it just brings back so many memories, and because it's important, you try to do everything on your own will lead to burnout and most of all important inefficiencies. When you effectively delegate, it allows you to distribute tasks to the right people based on their skill set and capacity. And now this allows you to have free time to focus on the higher level project oversight. And by doing these things, you can clearly define what are the realistic deadlines and the right resources that are allocated to complete the work successfully. Here's an actionable tip, or I should say tips, provide clear instructions and expectation. When you're delegating, be specific about the task, objective, deliverable, deadlines, and quality standards. Next one, empower team member with authority. I know as project managers, either future project managers or current project managers, you're going to get into a place where you are going to want to try and control everything. Trust me, I've been there. I've done that. I've got the t-shirt, the shorts, the matching socks to go along with the whole outfit, but it just does not work because you have to pay attention to the overall project and still go down and see what is going on in the day-to-day. So delegate not only tasks, but also decision-making authority that goes on within the team. Monitor progress without micromanaging, like regular check-ins on delegated tasks, but focus on offering support and removing obstacles rather than micromanaging. And the last and final one, provide constructive feedback. After the task is completed, offer feedback that recognizes success and suggests areas of opportunity. When I say areas of opportunity, it's just a more of a way to say, hey, there's an opportunity here to have better success. All right, let's move on to point number five. Maintain detailed documentation to ensure project clarity and continuity. You know what we say here, documentation beats what? Documentation beats what? Documentation beats conversation. So proper documentation helps you track decisions, changes, processes, as well as lessons learned. Listen, family, this really allows team members to get up to speed extremely fast, and it ensures a real good flow of continuity, especially if someone leaves the role or transitions into a different role within the team. And this really is a reliable reference when questions arise. One of my major things that I always talk about is saying, exceptional documentation prevents confusion, it reduces risk, and it also keeps project aligned with their objectives. Here's my actionable tips. Document key decisions and rationales. More or less, you want to keep important decisions, including when they were made, who made the decision, who was involved, and were there any alternatives identified? Use standardized templates. One of my favorite standardized templates to use is a RAID log, especially when it comes to decision. Also, risk logs or change requests or status reports, or most of important, if you have a meeting, meeting recaps. Next point, update documentation regularly. Treat documentation as a living resource that evolves with the project. And my last and final two, organize for easy access. You want to put this in a location. Most of the time, someone will have like a share file or a SharePoint or some type of team repository where you can put it, more or less like a cloud-based type tool. And then the last one is encourage team contribution. You want to foster an environment that allows the team to contribute to the project documentation. Point number six, foster cross-project collaboration to drive synergy and efficiency. You know, one of the things in organizations that you'll see when you're leading projects is teams will have a tendency to be siloed. And when they're siloed, what ends up happening is you have knowledge gaps, you have inefficiencies. So what you want to be able to do is encourage cross-project collaboration that can break down these silos and leverage diverse expertise and promote the sharing of resources. And most important is best practice. Here's my actionable tips. Set up cross-project knowledge sharing sessions. That means organizing regular meetings where teams from different projects share updates and challenges as well as success. That is key, family, because when someone is learning at another project and you're leading it, you can have these two projects that maybe have nothing to do with each other, but may share similar challenges and how they can all work together. Next one, create shared resource pools. I talked about that. You want to find out ways that maybe you may be able to cross-reference specialized skills or tools that are in high demand for multiple projects, like creating a shared resource pool that teams can access as needed. And then the most important, use collaboration tools to bridge projects, like implementing a project management and communication tools that allow for easy cross-project collaboration. Point number seven, leverage cross-project learnings to continuously improve projects. You know, if you learn something as you're leading multiple projects that could be valuable to another one of your projects, you want to find a way that you can really cross-reference both of these projects. What I mean by that is best practices, strategies, tactics, any pitfalls that happen, and how did you go about improving it, whether it's from a decision-making aspect, and when you made those decisions, what were the outcomes of it? Here's some actionable tips. Conduct a post-project review. At the end of each project, hold a lessons learned, or in Scrum, they call it a retrospective, where you're able to document key lessons, challenge phase, and what went well. You also, the next one is you want to create a knowledge repository. We talked about that. Your shared drive, SharePoint, those type of places where lessons learned are housed and what were the templates that were used. And then last and final one, implement those best projects in upcoming projects. So apply those strategies and solutions that work well in the past to new or ongoing projects. Point number eight. Standardized project management processes to enhance efficiency and consistency. Now, one of the things I want to talk about here is if you can find ways to standardize your approach to leading projects. Now, this is not a one size fit all, because as project managers, we are guilty of that, hey, we're just going to put someone in this box and we're going to use the same format, the same thing, but it may not work on the other project. So you're going to have to be very adaptable. So if something worked well on a project that you're having a lot of success on, test it out, experiment with it. And if it doesn't work well, be willing to adapt to see how that worked well for, I mean, being willing to adapt and experiment so you can figure out, okay, maybe I may have to take what worked well on project one and work, and then what, how I had to make the adjustments for project two, and then combine those together for project three. This way, this really helps you. But I will say, if you do find success on using the same thing on project one and it works well for project two, here's the actionable tips that you want to use. You want to create a standard templates and checklists. This means developing standardized templates for project documents like your risk management plan, your communication management plan, your status reports, your project charter. Now, again, I've seen project charters that have been multiple pages, and I've seen project charters that's been one page. I've seen communication management plans that have been one page, and then it's been multiple pages. So again, you have to see what works well for the project that you're leading. Use automation tools where possible. That's one of the things that can really help you if you're leading multiple projects. You know, one of the tools that I liked leveraging was a software, and they were bought out, was called Clarizen. This was a project management software that really helped automate like your project status report, and where executives to directors to VPs, they can just go into the tool and look to see where you're at. All they had to do was hit a button and it automatically populated out a status report. So anytime you can find ways to generate something that you're, generate something automatically that you're already doing as a repetitive task, is going to be useful for you. And also my last and final one is establish a project management playbook. This is what I always tell my newbie project managers to do who are getting into this game called project management, is start building your playbook. I promise you, I wish this was something I would have done early in my career, of creating this playbook. And by creating this playbook, what this allows you to do is, if you decide to leave that organization and go to another one, you have a playbook where you can go in and you've kind of experienced some of the highs and lows, and now you can take some of that information and you're already experimenting with that information to see what's going to work well in this particular organization. And basically what it is, family, is just a document that should outline best practices, the templates that you use, the roles that you encounter against all the different projects. And P.S., make sure you regularly update that playbook as you evolve. All right, here's my two bonuses for you, family. Like I said, I want to over-deliver. So prioritize projects strategically to maximize impact. When you are leading multiple projects, it's crucial to focus your energy and resource on those that have the highest strategic value. Without a clear prioritization, you risk spreading your effort too thin. I have been there. This is why I'm sharing this with you. I was literally in back-to-back-to-back meetings, and I was having to come in early to get some of the admin stuff done, and then staying late to get the remaining of the admin stuff done. So being able to, and once I understood, hey, what's the highest strategic value here? And how you do that is to basically find what aligns with the business goal. What is the return on investment, the urgency? And most of all, what is the stakeholders' expectation? Ensuring that is that's going to have the most impactful initiative. Here's my three actionable items. Classify projects by categories. Here's how you group them. So you group each of your projects into such as high priority, or basically mission critical, medium priority, which will be translated into important, but not an urgent. And then low priority is nice to have. Really, family, these classifications can help you allocate your time, your resource, and how you're communicating your efforts. Next point, communicate priorities clearly. You know, one of the things I realized, and it just reminds me of just anything in life. Have you ever went to a restaurant and you are waiting for your food and you're waiting and you're like, what's taking so long? If they would have came to you and said, hey, I want to let you know before we start, if the server came up to you, say, hey, before we start this experience, I want to let you know we are a little backed up in the kitchen. Because we're a little bit backed up in the kitchen, normally would take 10 to 15 minutes to bring out your food, may take an extra 10 or 15 minutes. If you're okay with that, then I would love for you to stay. But if not, I just want to set the expectation. And a lot of times, family, we don't set the expectation with our project team members as well as our stakeholder. So then what tends to happen is they start to push back. So the more transparent you are, the better you have at them pushing back, because now they understand what is actually going on. And the last and final point, revisit priorities regularly. You want to be looking at the organization goals, have they evolved, and periodically reassessing project priorities. Because again, just like anything, shifting, there's always a shift in business needs or new opportunities, and you want to make sure that you're up to speed on that particular thing. My last and final bonus, and then I'll give you my closing remarks, is manage stakeholder expectation proactively to build trust and prevent crisis. I'm just going to sum this up really fast for you, family. I kind of shared the story about the restaurant and the server. The way you build trust is being transparent. Don't try to hide anything. Don't try to sugarcoat it. Just be upfront and direct, but remain in a professional frame by saying, hey, this is what's going on. I am leading three projects. These are the three priorities in this particular order: project one, project two, and project three. If there's anything that you need from a communication or you have any questions or any things of this nature, I will set up office hours. And that is key. This is an actionable tip. This just came to me as we were discussing this, and saying, you want to set up office hours, and I would say set up a 30-minute or 45-minute office hours. And what you can do with that time is say, I have office hours available. If there was something you felt that was not covered, if there was something that you have a question about, if there's anything that may come up along in your journey as you're going through the project documents and artifacts, please come to this office hours. I will make sure I answer any question. See, now you put the ownership back on them. And most of important, here's another actionable tip. You want to address issues as fast and as early as possible, because the more proactive you are instead of reactive, the more respect you're going to get from your stakeholders. Here are my three closing remarks. Point number one, have the ability to learn how to say no so you can preserve your focus and resource. Remember, I gave you a proposed alternative. Here's an example. If you can't fulfill a request, suggest an alternative solution, such as delegating the task to another team member or scheduling for a later time when resources are more available. Point number two, practice time blocking to maximize productivity and reduce distraction. Like I said, family, putting your phone, your calendar in a do not disturb. If you use Teams or Slack, whatever that particular instant message communication is, put that in do not disturb. Put your calendar block your calendar off for more of a 60 to 90 minute focus work. And the last and final thing, you want to manage stakeholders' expectations proactively to build trust and prevent crisis. The biggest thing here is, family, addressing issues early so you can get in front of it and be proactive instead of reactive. Because if you're not, you're going to lose your trust of not only your project, your stakeholders, but also your project team. Family, I thank you so much for listening to today's episode. As you know, I go by the name ED. For all you smart and intelligent folks, that simply means Ed. And today's episode was really about, this is real world project management discussed, not theory-based project management. Until next time, I'll see you. I'm out.